Welcome to Hormone Health Podcast, brought to you by Georgia Hartman and Chloe Sheehan.
This podcast is an extension of Hormone Health Studio, which is our naturopathic clinic based here in Newcastle and online.
We're just two naturopaths who love a laugh, coffee, croissants, and conversations about real people with real health concerns.
Nothing's off limits. We're here to educate you on what's happening in your body, share emerging research, and debunk buried health misconceptions.
So sit back and let us do the talking.
Oh, sorry.
All right, here we go.
Anyway, shut up. No, I didn't realize that that automatically starts the recording process. Sorry.
Sure. Is this our intro? Yes.
This podcast episode today is for women seeking empowerment and understanding on their menopausal journey. For people who are going through this transitional stage, they deserve a guide who's comprehensively connected to all aspects of their experience. So meet Kimberly Vukurovic, a lecturer of mine at Endeavour University and also a seasoned expert with over 25 years of combined clinical experience as a remedial therapist, clinical naturopath, and registered psychologist. Kimberly's holistic approach encompasses the physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual dimensions of menopause. Kimberly owns a menopause psychology practice in Northwest Sydney and leads Empowered Menopause, a digital wellness initiative aimed at providing women with essential resources, community support, and knowledge to confidently navigate their menopausal transition.
I didn't have a very good sleep last night, and potentially that was because we were interviewing Kimberly today, and I have been so excited to speak to you. You were my lecturer when I was studying back in Endeavour, and we've maintained contact. But today we are speaking to you all about perimenopause, menopause, as you are the menopause psychologist.
I am, yes, and I'm a little bit nervous too.
Nervous, excited.
I love talking about this topic. Like, this is just the thing that I think anytime, like, I told my husband I had this podcast today, and I think he was really relieved because he's like, yay, you're going to have your, you know, talk about menopause fix today.
And then, yeah, you'll have your outlet. You can come home and leave me alone. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Kimberly. Now, we know that you have quite a beautiful, colourful background. Can you walk our listeners through how you became a psychologist and what that journey looked like for you?
Yes, I can. And you know what, when I was preparing for this podcast, it really actually made me stop and reflect and do this. And it really kind of made me, like, I'm turning 50 in May. Mm-hmm. And, you know, half a century of life.
How exciting.
And when I know, really exciting. And so when I look back on my career, I've really come to recognize, like, there's been a pattern of, oh my God, women go through this moments. Mm-hmm. And I think that those patterns of noticing as a human some areas of our lives where there's a lot of changes and shifting and suffering, it kind of sparks this empathy, this deep empathy in me that I want to kind of relieve that suffering. I want to figure out, you know, why does this happen and how do we fix this and how can we make it better, right? Because that's not really life. So there was a time when I really didn't understand my choices. I think, Chloe, you saw a post that I had written, which was really in the throes of perimenopause, where I was like, I'm so sorry, all my naturopathy people. I feel like I've just, like, you know, disappeared on you, and now I'm a psychologist. And yeah, and it was,
I was there for it all.
Can I just ask you, what were you thinking when you read that?
I just, like, knew that you were too powerful to go into hiding forever, and that there would be something, there would be like the great John Farnham return tour again. I knew. I was just like, yeah, she'll be back. I knew.
I love that. I love that. I love that you had so much faith in me in a moment when I didn't have faith in myself. And so, you know, I just didn't understand my choices. Why did? Because I found out that with naturopathy, I couldn't do. So with psychology, I couldn't do. I couldn't combine naturopathy into psychology. And so, you know, I was really not understanding it. But when I was looking through it today, I realized there's actually an inner wisdom that I followed. So I was really driven, I think, by answering the question, what is it to be human?
That's a big question.
Like, what is it to be human? What is it to be human? What is it to be a woman? What is it to be a body? What is it to be a spirit or a soul, whatever we want to call it, a consciousness? What is it to be that in this world and with each other? And this has just been like a lifelong talk about, you know, diving down rabbit holes. Mm. 25 years. So yeah. My path began in my early 20s, before I actually embarked on becoming a remedial massage therapist. And I was also a remedial therapist. So there was this weird time at Australasian College of Natural Therapies. I went to both, where you could do a remedial massage degree, but then you could do a remedial therapy degree as well. And the therapy had other things involved, nutrition, herbal medicine, that kind of stuff. Didn't make you a naturopath, but they were just things that gave you a holistic view of what things you could do rather than just the hands-on healing. And I, you know, when I was embarking on this, becoming a remedial massage therapist was actually after I had this, oh my God, right? Women have these pregnancy and birth and postnatal challenges, right? I had two kids. And the first one was like a 48-hour delivery. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. I was like sent home laboring in a taxi. Like, it was just not horrific. Okay. I'm not going to say horrific. Let's not mm-hmm. just like, but for me, it was a horrible first experience.
Yeah.
And so I thought, wow, women go through this, you know, like that's profound and challenging. And so it sparked my deep empathy of like, I want to find out, I know we go through this, but is there a way we can make this better? Can we not go through this so horribly? Is there a way to reduce the suffering? Can we as women and people and humans, can we support each other through this? So that became remedial therapy. And I liked that I was the only person in the room who would come in who was there for the mother 100%.
Mm.
So, you know, and I'd get the fathers would like, because I'd come in, knock on the door, because I used to work in the remedial private hospital system. For 10 years, I worked at Hurstville Private Hospital in postnatal and pregnancy. And I used to knock on the door and say, hey, I'm the massage therapist here. And I used to be very respectful. I'd say, look, you've got my pamphlet there. You just give me a ring. Let me know if you need me. And I'd close the door and I walk out. And I'd get fathers that would like rush out and like grab me. Because I was really the person that was there for the mother.
Mm.
So as a remedial therapist specializing in pregnancy and postnatal and working in that private hospital system for 10 years and then seeing them in their homes. So some of them, you know, I saw them for 2 babies, 3 babies. And so I had my hands, like when I thought about it, when I was looking at it, I thought, oh my God, I've had my hands physically on over 2,500 women.
Wow.
And I listened to their stories and I witnessed their journeys and I heard their pain. And I also saw what relieved their pain and I also saw what changed their stories. And I learned that the predictor of healing and positive health actually involved them actively looking after themselves. You know, like big surprise. But that's the truth of it, right? They have to look after their mind, body, and spirit. So I learned a lot about the musculoskeletal system and its role in positive health and maintaining strength and flexibility and how that it adds to a healthy body, mind, and spirit. We go, maybe I'll do something with my flexibility today. Maybe I'll do something with my you know, joints and my bones and my muscles today. But the reality is that it shouldn't be a maybe. It's a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolute necessity. So that's what I learned in remedial therapy. So Then when my youngest had health challenges, he had, I won't get into this because, man, this can really, I'll go down the rabbit hole with this. This was sparked my whole naturopathy career. But it didn't, it was the catalyst. No, it didn't spark. It was like, yeah, it sparked it. But before I was seeing all these things, and then what happened was my youngest had health challenges that a nutritionist healed through detoxification and calming his nervous system. And I won't get into it, but man, I didn't believe in this stuff. So I didn't, I wasn't one of the believers that went, yep, this is what I knew. I was not a believer, right? It's like if that never happened to me, I'd still probably be thinking, you guys are quacks.
Yeah.
Right?
But it wasn't like from what I remember, you were getting pushback after pushback and things weren't working. And it's like, yeah, well, you had to find
I tried your own. Everything medically.
Yeah.
And I had this, oh my God, moment. That's not where all the answers are. And then when he was healed, it was like, you know, you see those, because I'm from America, and you see those like African-American, because I've got a bit of African-American, right? You got the African-American churches.
Yeah.
You're like, it was one of those healing moments where it was like, to me, how could this be? And because I didn't understand it, of course, I needed to do a naturopathy degree.
Of course.
That's the only avenue, of course.
So when I realized that diet and your emotional states and all of that really matter, and I was thinking, you know, how do women not know this stuff so that they can be empowered to be better moms? Because that was a very like, man, if I tell that story, I've got to have a lot of tissues.
Yeah.
There's so much suffering. I remember holding him one time in a rocking chair, rocking backwards, looking at him, suffering, just thinking, maybe, like, I did this.
Mm.
I'm so sorry. Mm. You know? So, and I thought, how can women go through this and not know how to heal their families and not know how to heal themselves and not know? So, okay, naturopathy.
Yeah.
So that I embarked on a naturopathic degree, and I went to, at the time there was this degree that popped up, which is really reminded me a lot of the Bastyr degree at, and the reason why I liked it was just, there was so much to research what it is to be human. Right. There were so many other degrees going on. I liked them all. But when I saw this one, I went, oh my goodness, because this one had, we worked with cadavers. We did pharmacology and pharmacognosy. So we, you know, learned, you know, drugs and how they work in the body and natural agents and how they work in the body. And we learned clinical diagnostics and biochemistry, and just the list goes on. It was such a beautiful, enriching, in fact, the medical students of University of Western Sydney are now using our labs. You're welcome. And so I just dove, you know, it was just, it answered so many questions for me.
Yeah.
And so there were so many units, and I walked away feeling like I had learned so much, and I had all the answers. I had them all. And I did learn so much, and I did have a lot of the answers, right? I had a lot of the answers. And after running 12 years of running a successful naturopathic practice and then lecturing at Endeavor College for 4 years and managing the student clinic, which really translates to hearing thousands more of women's life stories, their struggles, their hopes, their dreams and fears, and seeing how they use exploration and clarity and knowledge and support that I gave them to heal themselves. Like I remember with the students, I don't know, Chloe, if you ever remember me saying this, but you know, your job is to give them information. And then to give them the support to facilitate that information. You can't heal them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the most empowering part of our work is to educate someone on what's happening in their body, how it's all communicating to each other. And then you just step back and let it do its thing.
I love that you brought in the word empowerment. That is exactly what empowerment is. And so, you know, when we're looking to try to empower a woman to take things to heal themselves, I really learned that her ability to use what I provided her with to heal her body, mind, and soul was a great predictor of her ability to control her behaviors and her mindset that was going to take her to the goal that she wanted to achieve. So plainly, if she could take the program I provided and carry it out, do it, and record the outcomes and commit to exploring them, like how did it work? Because, you know, they're all experiments. And then use that exploration and that data to then improve the program and then do that over and over, then we would get to a healing place. It was a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter what they came in with. And so they had to get out of their own way. And I wonder, you know, do you guys feel the wisdom of that as naturopaths? Like, do you see that?
Yeah, we only were having that conversation the other day about if you get out of your way, your own way, your body knows what it needs to do.
Mm. 100%.
In its simplest form.
100%. And you know, if we get out of our own way, also we start to do those things that we know we need to know. You know, could people come in, they'd say, I know that I'm overweight. I know I'm over a healthy weight. I know it's because I eat too much McDonald's. And then you go, oh, okay. Here's your program. Stop eating McDonald's. I know it's not this simple. We're not minimizing or you know, but, and then they come back and they go, I wasn't able to stop eating the McDonald's in its rawest form, right? You sort of go, that's profound. I know what I shouldn't do, but I can't stop doing it. And that's, I think, one of the biggest obstacles for our client, the client outcomes. You know, when they come back and say, did you take the herbs? No, I didn't. Did you stop eating the things or start eating the new things? No, I didn't. And so, you know, I thought, oh my God, us women cause a lot of our own suffering, right? Because we're not awake to it. And if we could just learn to heal ourselves and calm our bodies and our minds and enter the world each day from that place of strength, right? And then step on the path that we choose.
Yeah.
We could really meet most of our health goals. And so, and by the way, I just want to say, like, when you come away from the theory and you start practicing naturopathy, you see firsthand the power of naturopathy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I cried, like I physically cried. And I felt so depressed when I found out that my psychology registration meant that I couldn't combine the knowledge and the practice of the two.
Mm.
So I learned so much from
powerful.
I was right. So maybe that would be the problem.
Yeah.
So recognizing the barriers posed by behavior and mindset changes, I ventured into psychology because, you know, that's what you do. You just go and get a psychology degree.
Yeah.
I'd probably go and have a sleep, but yeah, you would go start another degree.
And I fell in love with positive psychology. Like, I love positive psychology. It's a philosophy closely linked to studying and teaching what humans can do to create positive health. So it's not just about what you can do to have, you know, an absence of poor mental health. It's like, what can you do to then have, what can you do to thrive?
Yeah.
What do humans do that then leads to thriving?
Did you enjoy the study process of psychology?
No.
Okay. You just want to
Wait. Yeah. No, I did and I didn't. You know how there's always two sides to a coin? I enjoyed the study process. I enjoyed the abnormal psychology and the biopsychology and the social psychology and the developmental psych and putting all that together in with naturopathy and remedial therapy. That has been my greatest. It has been so much fun.
But it also sounds exhausting mentally.
It is.
Like,
oh, yeah. Of
how
course,
do you have
I burned
the capacity?
Out. Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. That's perimenopause. It's one of the advantages of perimenopause, actually, is you no longer have the ability to continue to be dysfunctional.
Yeah, so true.
And see, at one point, I was finishing my thesis at the same point as running a government project in mental health at the same point as studying clinical redesign at the University of Tasmania, along with the Agency of Clinical Innovation, and doing a redesign project at the same time as doing a diploma of government. And then at the end of that, I turned 45 and perimenopause went bang.
Not to mention two kids and a household to run.
Two kids and everything else. That, everything else.
But Kimberly, correct me if I'm wrong. When we've spoken in the past, you mentioned that at the time you didn't know that what you were experiencing was the symptoms of perimenopause.
I think that leads us really, really beautifully into that next question, right? Because, you know, like that phase, this phase of my career where I, you know, now I'm a naturopath, I'm a psychologist, I'm still a naturopath, by the way, I still am a fully registered, I do my CPE, I have a few clients, but I can't make it because I have to make it two completely separate businesses, which is just that's mentally exhausting. So I can't do that. But I work as a psychologist. So, you know, I've got a menopause psychology practice, and that's my day-to-day that I do. And so what the catalyst to getting there was my very latest, oh my God. And that was my own experience. Right. So like my own experience was like transitioning into perimenopause was really a chapter of my life that took me by surprise, complete surprise. And this is saying somebody who treated menopause and perimenopause for 12 years and also understood all that stuff about what it is to be human, all that stuff about signs and symptoms. And I mean, I lived it. I taught it. Right. I lived it because I live what I teach. I don't think you can be a teacher without doing that. Like really, you have to experience it. And so I didn't know I was in perimenopause. I was at the end of all that stuff that I did. And I believed what I was being told, which is Kimberly, look what you've done to yourself. Mm-hmm. You're so broken. You've just broken yourself. You silly, silly, silly girl, right? And I was given like, you know, all these options that just didn't match my own values and actually didn't really, it didn't solve the root cause or the root problem. So despite my extensive background in women's health, you know, facing my own journey through perimenopause was a humbling experience. It really taught me the true meaning of empathy and resilience. It was a period marked by a roller coaster of physical and emotional changes, and ones that I had helped countless of women navigate, right? I remember women would come in and they'd be like, I'm hot. And I'd be like, oh yeah, that sounds uncomfortable.
But not until you're experiencing it sort of firsthand do you feel, are you saying that there's that added sort of compassion or empathy?
They don't have the language to express and explain what they're actually experiencing. I might try, and I'd love, you know, it'd be interesting to, if any, you know, the women out there hear this and think, yeah, that's right, right? But it's not that I'm hot like outside, how you feel when it's hot outside. I am hot like heat stroke hot. I am hot like fever hot. I am hot like debilitating hot, like an internal heat that tells the whole body, oh my God, something's happening. Pay attention. That's different.
Oh yeah. And it comes out of seemingly nowhere, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, it used to be like this electrical impulse. Like it felt like someone, you know, reached into my chest with these gloves on where they had like an electrical charge and just went zzz. And then what that would do, and then because it's at the heat actually comes from in within and it goes up. So it's, you know, so your whole head just feels like it's about to explode, right? But you just feel this hot, and it is that debilitating hot that, you know, when, because, you know, you say, well, what's the difference when you feel just a little bit hot versus when you feel fever hot? Do you take the day off work because you can't cope? Because it's so uncomfortable that it's painful. It's so when women turn around and they go, oh my God, I'm, you know, and you see, and like for me, you'll probably see it a couple times during this. You'll see me just go from here to here. I'll just go red. And so I used to think it was panic and anxiety And then I would start, you know, latching on and going into rumination. And yet, but, you know, so all of that kind of stuff really is, in, you know, it makes you so vulnerable. And nobody knows it's happening. It's like it's happening inside. It's like, you know, those people with the virtual reality thing goggles on?
Yeah.
And they're going like, and they're fighting. And you're going, what are you trying to fight? What are you, like, there's nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that woman is going through something fierce. It's profound. It's challenging. It challenges every cell in the body. And because it just keeps happening over and over without explanation or understanding, it's very scary. Can be very scary.
Mm. Particularly if you still have a regular cycle, you know, like you've still got your normal cycle things. And so you think reproductively or from an ovarian perspective, oh, no, this mustn't be perimenopause because otherwise my cycle would go out of whack, which isn't the case, right?
100%. There is the misinformation, the dismissal, the misinformation. And that's the thing. So I was dismissed. And that's really huge. That's really, really huge. Like, to be dismissed means to be invalidated, that your experience is not happening. And what is the definition really when we think about like real, like when I say real mental illness, I don't mean like there's fake and there's real. I mean serious. Mm-hmm. Serious mental illness always or usually there is psychosis, which is a break from reality. So if you're telling me that my reality is not really my reality, you make me feel broken. Mm-hmm. And like I have a mental illness. And then I operate from that. I believe that. And I operate from that lens. And that's the opposite of empowerment.
And even if you didn't believe it initially, but you're being told time and time again, slowly that will become a belief that you have. It's like, okay, well, they're telling me that nothing's wrong with me. There must not be. And then there's that disconnect with your own body.
Yes. And that's the biggest thing. It was the level, I mean, the level of vulnerability, that I felt was huge because it was really, you know, an emotional landscape. And the mood swings, they weren't just like a symptom to be managed, but they were a reflection of the profound internal shifts that were happening within me. When I was just telling, you know, it's just like, there's bad behavior, stop that bad behavior. Like, you know, well, that's not what's happening, right? I'm not just behaving badly, you know, with my menopausal rage.
And so for people listening saying, well, you guys keep saying perimenopause, how does that differ between menopause? And if somebody wants to know that definition, what does it mean? Like, what is perimenopause?
Perimenopause is really the way that I like to think about explaining it, because there's so many explanations that I found very confusing and very, and so we use this language, the same language over and over. I think the best way to explain it is it's like your body's heads up that the baby making days are winding down and that it's entering a bit of a puzzle solving mode and starting usually in your 40s, but it can start in your 30s as well. And sometimes, depending on whether or not you've had surgical intervention or you've had chemotherapy and different kind of medications, perimenopause can start as well. Or you can just go straight into menopause, just depending. But it's this phase is your body's way of transitioning into a new normal. So it's adjusting to functioning without relying so much on those reproductive hormones. And they've really kind of been running the show. When you think about progesterone and estrogen and everything they do, right? Not running the show, but they're kind of like, they're up there. they're some leaders, right? And so thinking of it as your body as trying to recalibrate and find its balance, all while giving you a mix of signals and symptoms that something new is happening. So it's a natural biological process, but it's not a natural process. And I'd love to talk more about that because I often confuses people when I say that.
Please. I straight away was like, what do you mean by that?
And before you go into that, I just want to say that it's so refreshing to hear somebody say transitioning into a new normal because you're not broken and you're, you know, just because you're not cycling anymore and you're not fertile doesn't mean that you're not valued or you're not any less of a person. It can be, from what I hear my clients say, a brand new them.
I am so excited to hear you say that, because that is exactly, you know, in all of the time and the effort and energy and all the research and everything we've been doing, because I'm doing a clinical redesign within this space as well with a team. And everything we keep coming back to is these myths as being the main myths. You hear about all these other myths, and they're important, and you'll hear them. If you Google, you'll hear all the myths. But these are ones I think you may not have heard before. And I think these are the ones that I think are the most important. One of them is that perimenopause is a natural phase. And it's a common misconception that perimenopause is simply a natural phase that every woman was created to endure. Okay, and let me just say that again, that perimenopause is simply a natural phase that every woman was created to endure. Okay, but it's a natural biological process, but that does not mean that it is a natural phase that we were designed to go through. So let's examine this closely. When we look at the philosophy, and we look at also history, and we look at what we know about what it is to be human in the past and what we know in the present, right? Historically, our bodies were not designed to navigate the extended period beyond the childbearing years. Like, while the cessation of reproductive function marks a biological transition, it's a journey into uncharted waters, beyond the edges of the maps like our ancestors left us. And we're probably what, the second or third generation? We didn't live to be 100.
Yeah.
Right? One day we lived to be 30. And then one day we lived to be 40. And then one day it was 60. And one day it was 80. And one day it's like, oh my gosh, people live to be 90. And it's like, oh my gosh, if you live to be 100, the queen will give you a letter.
Yeah, it's like it's some sort of...
That's the only reason why I want to become a centurion, right? I want to get that queen's letter and then...
No, and society's not set up to support people for this long, I don't believe. Well, they're not doing it right anyway.
No. So the thing is that perimenopause is an evolutionary transition. So in reality, perimenopause represents an evolutionary shift, a recalibration of the body in response to a changing environmental and social conditions. And so our bodies adapt to age just as they adapt to other life stages. And rather than viewing perimenopause as a natural phase, it's more accurate to see it as an evolutionary journey, right? A chapter, a new chapter in our body's story. So I then often get that question, why is that important? Right? Why is that so important? Well, as a psychologist and, you know, and understanding the human condition and what happens with the human when we believe that, if we recognize perimenopause as an evolutionary transition rather than a natural phase, it's actually crucial for several reasons. So if you see menopause solely as a natural phase akin to other bodily functions like menses or pregnancy, you might actually be inclined to think your body should manage it effortlessly. Right.
But even those things then, women aren't managing effortlessly anyway.
No, they're not. Isn't that interesting? And we were created to do that. We were created to have a beginning, middle, and end, right? To pregnancy and to menses. And so this perception can lead to frustration or failure when the body struggles to adapt without active management, right? So I get women who, you know, just fall into my chair across from me and just go, I don't know why my body's doing this to me.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be doing this to me. And that's the first thing. Well, right? And so it's really kind of akin to expecting a ship to sail smoothly through unfamiliar waters without actively managing the ship. Could you imagine that? Like, I don't have a map and I'm going to, because, you know, you're the captain of your ship. But instead, I'm going to lay on the deck and say, I am the ship.
Yeah.
And this ship should navigate itself.
Yeah. Mine's probably like a blow up boat with like one oar.
Right? Whereas at least with pregnancy, you do have a map. You can lay on the boat at some points and say, I am the ship. right? Because you kind of know, and not only do you have a boat, but you've got a support system. You've prepared. You're fully prepared. Your mindset, you know, people have said, hey, how are you going to slow down?
And people are excited for you.
People are excited for
your
journey.
That's a big point
and
too,
it's like,
isn't
oh,
it?
How amazing is your body transitioning
into this next phase? This is so exciting for you and your family. You don't get that in perimenopause.
No, it's just, it's negative connotations.
So recognizing that one thing, right? Recognizing that menopause is a stage that our bodies weren't initially designed to navigate can really shift your mindset. So it shifts it from one of disappointment to one of understanding and proactive engagement. Oh, okay, my body is doing this thing because my body is trying to recalibrate. This is, although it's biologically happening naturally, right? I actually actively need to pay attention and manage it. So this comes to the second myth that I think is really profound in keeping people stuck and disempowered. Perimenopause is an illness, right? Somehow my body is breaking down and somehow my body is letting me down. It's breaking. It's not so good anymore. There was a time when I woke up and instead of this, oh my God, I can't wait to be 50. I love getting old. I love the wisdom that comes with getting old. I love it so much. I love getting old. I celebrate my birthday. But there was a day in perimenopause and for years where I just got up and I felt old. Like I was no longer a part of the world and I no longer wanted to be a part of the world and I no longer cared to be a part of the world. I was ready to be retired. And, you know, it was just like I felt it in my bones. It just felt so old. And so I felt ill, like, and I'd say things like, oh, my menopausal brain, my stupid menopausal brain, or I wouldn't say it out loud. I'd say it to myself and to my closest, I would say it out loud, right? And so if we think about perimenopause as an illness, something to be cured or treated, this perspective overlooks the body's innate ability to adapt and recalibrate. So it's not a sickness that's engulfing the body. It's a signal for the body to engage in homeostasis, to maintain internal stability amidst changing hormonal landscape. And so it's a natural recalibration process. And it's almost like a recalibration of the body in response to, if you think of it like, let's say that you had to go without wearing shoes. Or let's just say that you had to go without wearing shoes, but your body said, let's just start by taking one shoe off. And now you're walking around with one shoe. Especially if you're wearing heels. This is going to be really funny. It's going to feel funny. There's going to be places that ache. There's going to be things that don't feel good. It's going to throw out your back. It's going to throw out your neck. Then you're going to probably think, you know what? And I want to swear I won't because it's your podcast, right?
Oh, but no,
is that okay?
No,
I was just say, absolutely. Fuck these high heels. Fuck these shoes, right? And then you go, I'm going to put on a tennis shoe. Okay, you guys call them running shoes?
Yeah.
Sneakers?
I mean, shoes? I don't play tennis. I mean, I don't run, so they're just shoes to me.
Shoes, okay. You know those shoes that have the rubber on the bottom?
Yeah.
And lots sneakers. Of funky designs on the top? Okay, sneakers. So, you know, you put those on and you go, oh, this feels better. Like visually think about that. Like if you had a tennis shoe on versus a heel and then you were barefoot on the other shoe, would that be easier?
It's an adaptation.
It's an adaptation. And why is it important? Because perceiving menopause as an illness leads to an overemphasis on medical intervention, potentially overlooking the body's innate capacity for adaptation and resilience. And so it's like seeing the ship as perpetually damaged, focusing on solely on repairs and not appreciating the journey or the crew, which is your body's ability to adapt. While medical guidance is really vital in perimenopause, especially for managing specific symptoms, this viewpoint might overshadow the natural recalibration process and the empowerment from actively steering through this phase. So
And not without fight as well, because I'm thinking about that analogy. How long are we fighting that through that pain, or that, no, I can do this, I can deal with this, until you make a change for whatever more comfortable state that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So we think about all of, like, just think about for a second, all of the things that, say, progesterone, like, helps to manage, right? So we think about, you know, your menstrual cycle, and we think about supporting pregnancy. Those are really two huge things, right? We think about influencing libido. We think about mood regulation. We think about bone health. We think about sleeping. We think about normalizing blood sugars. We think about supporting the immune system, thyroid hormone interaction. That's just progesterone, right? And then you think about estrogen, and you think about, same, reproductive health, bone health, heart and blood vessels, skin, mood and brain function, right? Hair, fat distribution, muscle and joint health, vaginal health, fertility. Well, we know that one, right? It's huge. So you lose these things. And so what it is it's the body's journey to balance, right? Like, your body is used to a certain rhythm with these hormones. So when their levels drop and they fluctuate, your body notices that. So, you know, and that is that adjusting to walking with one shoe on. So, you know, your body always tries to keep things stable, but with less estrogen and progesterone, it really has to find a new normal. And that transitional period is why you feel these various symptoms, like hot flashes and mood swings.
And Georgia, you and I speak a lot about the fact that women typically in a transitional perimenopause period are now dealing with children that may be younger. They're dealing with potential relationship breakdowns. They're dealing with, you know,
aging parents,
changes in career. So this is all you're trying.
We're seeing a lot of divorce lately. I don't know whether we're the catalyst for that.
It's such a transitional period, not only from a hormonal physical perspective, but lifestyle too.
We could have 20 podcasts on this.
Yeah, because I think, sorry, Kimberly, just one point I wanted to make on that was that a lot of people we see are like, okay, these are my symptoms. Clearly there's a hormonal thing going on. What can I take?
Yes.
And sometimes the best thing you can do is take nothing and have a completely different approach.
Yes. Do you know what the American or the Australasian Menopause Society and the American Menopause Society, and I think the International Menopause Society, there's a term that they've coined, perimenopause. They've called it the window of vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because it highlights the unique set of challenges that women may face during this stage, right? It emphasizes the importance of recognizing and addressing the emotional and physiological changes that occur. But, you know, what happens is you've got this, so, you know, you've got this normal life stress. You've got your home stuff, your work stuff, your personal life. You've got your self-care, and you've got your, you know, physical things that are happening. You've got your mental health. And what happens with perimenopause is, because it's kind of like stepping onto a cruise ship and deciding that you're just going to be on a cruise ship for the next 5 or 10 years or 20 years, right? You don't know when you wake up what your normal is going to be, or what your stable is going to be, or where you are going to start from. It's like if at 12 midnight you wake up and there is a storm in the seas, there is a storm in the seas. There's not a whole lot you can do about it. You're not on solid ground anymore. So that level of added stress of not being able to find a solid place, because, you know, most women will say one day I was coping, and then the next day it was like, I don't cope anymore. I don't know what happened. I can't find myself. I've lost myself, or it just all became too much overnight. And it's like, I kind of want to say, well, no, I know it feels that way, but probably because you're no longer living on land. You're now living on a boat that has, the weather is not under your control. So if you function really well with 8 hours of sleep, well, is it not normal for you to not function so well on 4 hours of sleep? So it's a window of vulnerability, because it affects everything. It affects it affects relationships. Women, sometimes it can blow up their lives because they think that it's their partner, but it's actually this deep internal shift. And those are the things that in my psychology practice, I don't, you know, women come in to me for menopause, but they are actually coming in for all the things that them not managing the menopause, and this isn't blaming them ever, but them not knowing, right? Nobody's telling us. I didn't know either. I had to figure it out myself. So you can't blame the woman. It's them not quite understanding this phase of life and to look at it from that lens. And so sometimes I'll get women who are postmenopausal, they'll come in their 60s and their 70s, and they'll say, I know it wasn't my husband and it blew up my life. I left my marriage. Or they'll say, I left my career. I was a CEO, but I thought that I was losing my abilities or my capacity. Right? So I know that this has the possibility of being overwhelming, and you know, listeners hearing this can feel like it's very doom and gloom. But I hope that instead what they take from this is a validation of maybe it's not what you think it is. Maybe it's not your life, right? And maybe stopping and taking stock of everything and looking at this from a perimenopausal lens. Can you see anything that kind of tells you that maybe it might not be your husband? Because I know that when I'm in a hot flush, when I have a hot flush, even my husband touching me will just flare it up.
Yeah.
And so if we had a fight,
he's first. And I felt the shooting
everything
range.
In my body, yeah, everything in my body saying, "Do not touch me right now." But I know that that's because I'm having a, and he goes, oh, and he'll feel it. He goes, oh wow, and he'll take his hand off. But if we weren't in a good place, or I didn't know what it was. Right, I could misinterpret it as that.
Mm. But what happens is generally these women are having this perpetual blame. Yes. I'm the cause of my weight gain. I'm the cause of this, or it's just that blame game on them and that. And then once you're looking at yourself in that negative light, everything is going to be cast gray.
And that's what leads to disempowerment. And that's why it's so important. And, you know, and like, I think this is another thing that women need to hear, because this is something that unless they've actually seen a naturopath or they follow your podcast or they, you know, they know about hormones and they know about health and they know about all of those things, they don't actually realize that the body can do a form of calibration. They think, oh, estrogen not in my body means I don't have estrogen. Or it means that that's like, now I have to take estrogen. Like this is an estrogen deficient problem. And it's not really. So from a clinical naturopathic perspective, which, you know, as you know, emphasizes holistic and natural approaches to healthcare. So understanding the biological basis and the process of perimenopause involves examining both the physiological changes and the body's mechanism for maintaining or balancing homeostasis. So the biological basis of perimenopause is so important for women to know, because what they don't understand is that the body seeks to achieve homeostasis through a variety of mechanisms. So adrenal gland support, right? So, you know, they produce a form of estrogen called estrone, as well as androgens, and those can be converted into estrogen in body tissues, right? So supporting your adrenal health is really key to focus on. So your fat tissues, body fat can convert androgens into estrogens, right? So this peripheral production of estrogen plays a more significant role as the ovary output declines, but it highlights the importance of maintaining healthy body fat composition. The liver processes hormones and the gut influences hormone reabsorption. So the naturopathic approach emphasizes, you know, liver and digestive health to enhance the body's natural hormone metabolic balance, right? And bone remodeling. So estrogen plays a role in bone density, but the body adapts over time to lower estrogen levels by rebalancing bone formation and reabsorption processes. And so adequate levels of calcium and vitamin D and other nutrients, along with weight-bearing exercises and naturopathic strategies to support bone health, is important. And then, you know, let's talk about, I think, a very important one. And you know, I know this is about where to start. By the way, this is where to start. Nervous system adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so nervous system adaptation. The nervous system adjusts to hormonal fluctuations, which can mitigate symptoms like mood swings and hot flashes, right? Stress management techniques such as meditation, yoga, and adequate sleep, they're really crucial to support the nervous system health. So it's like if we don't know that as women. So as women, like, okay, if I didn't know that babies came out of my vagina, and I thought they came out of my belly button.
I thought,
right?
You were going to say bum then. Sorry.
I love that that's where you came. You know, that would make more sense.
Well, I was ready for it.
Okay, so let's say that we thought it was going to come out of our bum, but we didn't know why, and we didn't know how, and we didn't know when, and we didn't know what was happening. So let's just say that when your baby's kicking you, and no one has told you what that is, that you don't know that that's your baby birthing. It's trying to get out, right? So you see how knowledge and information is so important.
Totally.
For us being able to be empowered and being able to manage this and all the stuff that is happening right now for women, where there's misinformation, there's dismissal, there's all these things. You know, if you ask me perimenopause, like, where do you start? You have to start by calming the nervous system. You got to calm the farm. Stop. Just think about the wisdom of this for a second. What happened when you guys were pregnant? When you first knew you were pregnant, right? And you were like, oh my God, there's a baby inside of me. Did you just go, oh, well, I'll just let it grow and I'll ignore it?
Are you talking about my first pregnancy or my third? Because
first, because this is the one where you go, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Absolutely terrified.
Okay? The first one. Okay, there's fear.
There is fear.
And then what else is there? There's no wrong or right answer.
Acceptance of potentially a changing body.
Acceptance of a changing body. What else?
I mean, there's excitement.
Excitement. Yeah, this is exciting.
For me, fear of loss.
Yeah.
Loss, right? Is that loss of like who I used to be?
No, fear of
loss of the
loss of pregnancy. Yeah, of loss of pregnancy and something that is new that I will lose.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. That's real, right? Because that's real, right? That's a real possibility. So now we know it's going to be, this is serious. We take it seriously, right? So we'll ask ourselves questions like, people will say, and how are you going to support yourself through this phase? And people will say, how much time are you going to take off? And people will say, what are you going to do for yourself? You know, and then you might say, the first thing you do is, I'm going to make an appointment with the GP, right? So that I can talk to him about my health, and I want to make a plan, and I'm going to read some books.
Well, you get resources, don't you, from your GP? You get a pamphlet on what to eat and what not to eat. You get a pamphlet on the different model of care and guidance on all the different options.
Yes.
So you get mothers groups.
You get mothers. Like, yeah, that is such a good point.
Yeah, you get support.
Yeah,
people don't look at you like they don't know, like you're an alien speaking a different language.
Mm.
I still have friends who haven't been through menopause before, and I, you know, sometimes I can see the look. They're like looking at me like, I believe your experience because I've got nice friends, you know, but I can see that they don't fully connect with the level, the depth, the vulnerability that this experience brings. And so you need that. We did a retreat. When I say we, I have a project team, and part of one person who's on my team is Anne Carenti, and she's over there at Billabong Retreat. Don't know if you know Billabong Retreat at all over in Morelia.
No.
So, oh gosh, this is like.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. If you don't know Billabong Retreat, you need, and this
no,
is
I don't.
Okay.
Nobody's getting paid here, right? If you don't know that retreat, that's that place is a bit of gold. And so we held a retreat.
Team bonding day.
And we had that thought. Look, you know, women need to be supported in this. And we ran a retreat. And so what was profound in this retreat was that in the first 10 minutes, I witnessed the women healing themselves as a group. I witnessed them validating each other. Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. I witnessed them laughing with each other. Yeah, it's not so serious. I'm okay. I witnessed this, you're okay, sister. I witnessed this, and guess what? They all had different stories. They were all in different phases of menopause, because that's the thing that we really have to tell women. Your story is not in a book somewhere. Nobody has written a blueprint to your menopausal transition, because there is none. Your blueprint lies in you listening to the feedback. You have to check into your body. So, for example,
we're not good as humans doing that, are we?
We're not. and so it's important that you actively manage, that you have clarity around what's happening, that you have clarity around. So there's this framework that I've put together, which is this simple framework, you know. First, you need self-awareness. You need to understand what's happening to you, why it's happening to you, and then really accept that. And then you need to integrate, you need to figure out, right? Like, who are my people? Where's my team? What can I do? Right? Just because I have hot flushes that wake me up at night and give me insomnia doesn't mean that I shouldn't be focusing on insomnia. And I go, it's perimenopause. I'll take HRT. And that's not to minimize or, right? Because that does work. But it's like, well, what else can you do? What else can you do? What if because a lot of women I have take HRT and that's not the full answer. And they say, I still have insomnia. And so then we do sleep hygiene. Or maybe we learn that, you know, we do experiments and we learn that they sleep better with the air conditioning on, or we learn that they sleep better if they give themselves a cycle of 4 hours and a nap in a day, right?
And alcohol, another self-medicating
huge
behavior that we take upon ourselves.
Yeah. The answer is in your body. If you are I love to say you're an N of one, right? You're a study of one.
Yeah.
So stop looking to find your journey's answer in a book. You have to develop a relationship with yourself. You have to gain clarity over what is happening for you. And, you know, like if it was weight loss, I'd say, okay, what is your metabolism doing? Right? We have hair, we have feces, we have blood, we have urine. We have so many ways to see what our body's doing.
Mm.
We can do a DEXA scan to see what our level of, you know, fat versus, and then we take that information and we take it to a professional and they go, oh, based on this, this is what you need to do. So, you know, like in my practice overall, that's kind of, you know, if we really simplified it, that's kind of what I do. I just help women come in and I help validate their experience. I help them calm down. And when I say calm down, I don't mean calm down and, oh, a woman's hysterical, calm her down, right?
Mm.
But in a, you're okay.
And that's through education as well, because if you don't know what's happening to your body, and you, like you said, you're getting these hot flashes that are alerting you that something's wrong, providing that framework to say this is what's happening in the body is helping to calm too.
Yeah, you're not broken is the biggest one. And that's the thing that I saw women validating, because when you're being dismissed and the people around you may not have the same experience, then who is actually, you know, that's what we do as humans. We're attracted to people who have had lived experience, the same lived experience, because we recognize it and it validates us. But guess what? Through the work that we do in my practice, by the end, right? And I say end meaning when they get to fly out of the nest.
What are the divorce rates?
And there is the transformation. I actually save a lot of marriages.
Yes, I was going to say.
Whenever it comes to relationships, men, I make them just explore before it is, you know, it is him.
Yeah.
But I don't know. See, and this is part of perimenopause too. It's like you things like just drop out of your brain.
You were saying at the end of working together with somebody, what you're getting to.
Oh, I teach them how to seek validation from themselves, which means it's called a self-sustaining stability, which is you learn how to get everything you need from yourself so that you can use all your energy on this transition. And we haven't as people been taught to do that, especially not in a Western society. There's a lot of Eastern philosophy. So there's a lot of positive psychology, clinical. So if you ask, you know, where do you start? I'd say first you started acknowledging that perimenopause might be a thing for you.
Mm.
Right? And if it is a thing for you, then it's about gaining clarity. But we first have to stop. We have to come back from overwhelm. I'm realizing that I don't think that I could give the full solution if we don't talk about overwhelm.
Yeah.
So what do you guys know about overwhelm, or what do you see or think about overwhelm?
Yes, we see it a lot. I see it in terms of just, it's almost like that cup that's just overflowing. And how do you stop? How do you prioritize all of those things and say, well, this can go and this can stay?
Yes, yes. You know what's interesting? I had diverted from that simple. The P of simple is prioritization. Yeah. Mm. The M of simple is mindfulness. And then all of that leads to learning and empowerment, right? But if we first talk about overwhelm, and I bet you guys see it. I bet you guys see it. What it looks like is you're talking and they're dancing behind their eyes.
Mm.
And you're saying something and they're not actually responding to what you're saying. They're just telling you more. So you might say, oh yeah, that's this. And then it's like they haven't even heard you. And do you see that sometimes?
Yeah.
And it's like this loop. And it's like and there's not a conversation. It's almost like they're having a conversation with themselves. And this is when people are overcome and overpowered by thought and emotion. So think about it as the thought saying, pay attention to me, pay attention. And the feels going, no, pay attention to me. And you're going, da, 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 da. And they're not taking it in.
Yeah. They want to answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the thing is that I love Brené Brown. I think we're like sisters from another mister. Right. So she says overwhelm means an extreme level of stress,
mm-hmm.
an emotional and or cognitive intensity to the point of feeling unable to function. Right. And she says, we all know that feeling that washes over us and leaves us completely unsure of what to do next. So even when people ask us, hey, how can I help you? Or like, okay, what needs to be done? You just tell me, right? Like responding with organized thought feels impossible. And so it's also when you can get very crappy with yourself and you can think, you know, if I had the wherewithal, and this is some of like hormonal, like you guys, if any guys are listening to, this is some of where the rage comes from. If I had their wherewithal to figure out what comes next and how we need to approach all of this, I wouldn't be walking around in circles crying and talking to myself.
Yeah.
Right?
So true.
And so, you know, overwhelm is where conscious thought goes to die. Organized thought, organized conscious or conscious organized thought. And what do you need, you know, when this is happening, you're trying to problem solve. So it ends in rumination, right? And then your stories, fantasies, or you might think about the past, what if, or you might go, it's not fair. And you go down that, or you might go blame him, blame yourself, blame the world. Do you see what we're doing here is it's almost like, you know, you have to get from A to B, right? I have to manage my menopausal journey. And a lot of women are stuck in just doing this, right? They're just because they're so overwhelmed by it. So I was too. I can tell you where that took me. It took me to lose most of I don't know if it's most of, right? It felt like most of my strength and my muscle mass. My body was changing. I dropped out of my head because I was so overwhelmed. I didn't know, as a naturopath who taught others how to do this, how to keep myself well. I didn't take herbs. I didn't eat right. I didn't exercise. I didn't. I just went down this path of I am old. I will die soon. Yeah. So I felt I am old and I don't know what to do. So I'm just so overwhelmed. And so it took me a couple of years to get back to a place of strength, you know, to get back to a place where now, no, I'm physically, I'm flexible, I'm strong, I'm this, I'm that. But that took me to resolve the overwhelm first.
Is that a stage of grief? Is in terms of being in that of, you know,
part of it,
feeling that I'm just going to feel sorry for myself because that's easier than being proactive.
Blaming others.
Yeah, blaming others.
Part of it. But you know what those are from a philosophy perspective of acceptance and commitment therapy, which I really love this philosophy because it really kind of flows into clinical mindfulness and also it's married up with positive psychology, is that when we're talking about those states, and then again, here we go. Prompt me, please. Menopausal drop.
The philosophy of...
Philosophy of acceptance and commitment therapy in the theme of...
When you...
Pause this and rewind.
Can we bring this to... Can we bring this to
the... Do I have a perimenopausal brain?
Hey, can we bring this to the room for a second?
Yeah.
This is what happens.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that if women actually think that this is them broken in some way, what they have to realize is no, it's just your body, it's your brain at one point going, right? Yeah. And now it's going, and then if you don't make a big deal about it, your nervous system then doesn't get crazy about it and you lose it. You eventually bring it back again. So I know we were talking about acceptance and commitment therapy, and we were talking about the philosophy of acceptance and commitment therapy. Oh, we were talking about emotional control strategies. See, it just comes right back. And so emotional control strategies are when you have a feeling or an emotion and you don't want to feel that feeling or emotion. You resist it, right? That's where you create a conflict. I don't want that. So I want to control that emotion. I don't want to feel that emotion. And so we will do something that we often think will help us. So for example, if I felt panic and an excruciating, like a fear of the doom and that you're going to die, it's a horrible feeling. It's very scary. And I don't ever want to feel that again. I could be saying to myself, okay, I just had that feeling. I don't want to have that feeling. So then, you know, if we know the biology of the human is to take something that happened that is negative and to play it over and over again, just in case you need to know how you survived it, like a bear attack, right?
Yeah.
And so you go, oh, my mind wants to problem solve it. But guess what? It's hormones. How are you going to solve that problem? So then so we call it an emotional control strategy. You're trying to control the emotion and originally it feels good because you're doing something about it. But when you use up all your energy of your brain and you're absolutely exhausted because you have been ruminating, because I heard somewhere, I don't know if this is right or accurate, but that our brain is like 22% of our energy that we like uses up 22% of our, just think when people ruminate, they're using that energy. And so they're exhausting themselves. And so we call that an away move. It's not helping them become the person they want to be or the life they want to live. It's not helping them manage their symptom. So often the reason why people do that is because they're trying to cope or help themselves because somewhere somebody said that was a good idea, right? Problem solve. If you have a problem, problem solve, right? You can come up with a solution. You can solve anything with your brain, or you can't.
Yeah.
So you have to resolve the overwhelm, and the recipe for resolving overwhelm is to stop. It's not how you carry the load. Sorry, it's not the load you carry, right? It's not the load you carry. It's how you carry it. And if you're entering into something new, like with pregnancy, you go, oh, there's a new little seed in me. I'm going to put the load down and I'm going to pick and choose the things that I need for this stage.
Yeah, it's like relax and put your feet up and honor your body. Whereas I feel like in the modern day, overwhelm is almost what people want to achieve.
Yes.
It's almost like desirable. Look how much they're doing.
Yes, it's how we measure our worth.
Mm.
It's how we measure our success. And, you know, lately I measure my worth and my success by how much I've been able to tend to my needs and how much I've been able to stay grounded with myself and make conscious decisions. And guess what? When I do that, most of the time, I leave the world a nicer place. So overwhelm is really important. You have to, everything you said there was exactly what you have to do. You have to stop, be still. You have to, you know, what I would say for women is when you find this out, look on your calendar for a period of time where you can just pretend like you're taking a holiday, but don't take that holiday. Just pretend like you're taking one.
A mental holiday.
Yeah, just take a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks off and then actively reset. Right? Actively allow yourself to get up when you need to get up. Start to make a journal of how you're feeling and what happens at certain times of the day. Make a journal of what makes things worse, what makes things better. Make a journal of things that you didn't know that you need to know, or people that you need on your team that you don't have on your team, or people you have on your team that you need to ask this question to. So, you know, that's that first step where you have to stop and allow everything to settle and then move forward from that place. Now what?
Yeah. And what you're saying is you don't have to do it on your own. You don't have to problem solve it on your own because,
No, you're not alone. You're not alone. And there's a lot of people in this space at the moment because I think this is the generation where we're all going, what the? Right? Mm-hmm. This is not okay. It reminds me of like, postnatal depression.
Yeah.
Before it was understood, there were so many women who were dismissed, who went through it and suffered, who thought they were broken and were disempowered. And so this is very much the same thing. You know, if you're perimenopausal in these days at the moment, it's kind of a better place to be because there's a lot happening. There are a lot of shifts happening in the background with a lot of, because what we have to remember is that our medical professionals, the reason why they can't lead the way, and I'm talking about myself as well and you guys as well, right? The reason why we can't lead the way is because there's no blueprint.
Yeah.
And so, and also so Chloe, how much did I teach you about menopause?
You know, it's like skimming the surface when you think about lived experience or
Nothing.
Yeah.
Like nothing. Because I didn't really know. I was just like, okay, black cohosh is really great for hot flushes and weight gain. It's okay. They can just, and this is what I've learned. Your body is changing. It's completely different. And you have to go from your body to know how to keep, even me as a nutritionist, I have to keep you know what it's like? It reminds me of, I'm an equestrian as well. And like always what would happen with equestrians is that they would argue about who is the right philosophy, right? Like, it's like, no, this cowboy, he's the one that knows you only do his philosophy. And what I actually learned was that you need a belt because horses aren't black and white, and they're not like, they like have emotions and feelings like me, and they're like weird and they do weird things, and it's not like you don't have a full a manual.
Yeah.
So you have to, so I would say, okay, I would learn this technique and I would learn that technique and I would learn, okay, so when he won't move forward and he's really scared and he's frozen, I'm not going to use that technique because I know that technique gets me bucked off and run over.
Yeah.
I'm going to use this technique. Oh, that worked. This technique might have been back off, back up from what he's scared of. Let him back off from it. So it's the same thing with women who are in perimenopause. It's not like one thing fits all. It's not like this diet or that diet or this herb or that herb. It really is about them going out there and trying them. Learn, if you find a diet that you think that you like, do it and see how your body reacts to it. You'll know pretty soon if it works for you or doesn't work for you. Obviously follow, you know, registered health professionals like you guys.
Of course, but it's sort of like working out. I can't just say, oh, this is what worked for someone else. This is what's going to work for you.
Just experiment. I know like it's so hard when I've got women who come in and they say HRT worked for me and then another person says it didn't work for me and I feel like I'm the one who, I'm the odd person out. And I go, no, it doesn't work for a lot of people. They go, really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can do this and you could, so it's like, go out there, try things, don't adhere to one thing. And just because your body didn't do it doesn't mean that your friend, that it won't be good for your friend. So, you know, we have to really adapt this. This is an evolutionary transition. Every woman is individual, like your fingerprint. And you need to take the information from your own body and go out there and experiment in a safe environment with health professionals.
Well said. Yeah, I think that that's in terms of for somebody listening who wanted to know more about that whole perimenopause, it's that first step. Because once you're in it, then you can explore, but it's about knowing yes. which direction to go. Can I ask you yes. one final question in terms of perimenopause? Yes. Do you think it is an unfair physiological effect on the female body, or do you think that we're just not equipped to deal with it properly in our modern lifestyle?
Well, I could answer that from several viewpoints. From my viewpoint as Kimberly, the person, the human, the woman, it's fucking unfair. It's not fair. It's so not fair. Okay. And, you know, and the little person in me too goes, it's not fair. But the reality is when we look at what it is to exist, like if we look at the philosophy of what it is to exist, maybe Eckhart Tolle's is probably the one that I like the most. It's really like reality, is that our main job in life is to experience life. So if we take it from clinical mindfulness, which is Eckhart Tolle, which is just our whole existence is just to experience life, like that's what we're here for, then is anything fair or unfair? I mean, what's fair and what's unfair?
And even if it is unfair, you still have to experience it.
I think that's what it gets to. Like, so we can do this because that's what that is. That's like we can run in circles. Like, this is happening. I don't want it to be happening because it's not fair. And in my practice, I would say, look, it's not good. It's not bad. It just is. Because the thing is that once you put a judgment on it, you create conflict. Whether you put a good judgment or a bad judgment, you create conflict. Right? This is what's happening. Good. I like this is happening. I want more of this conflict. Because the reality is you don't have control over an ever-changing world. I mean, we're on a world that's spinning. Yeah. Yeah. That's like nowadays, if you still believe that. Like people debating about whether the world's spinning or not. I'm like, there's so many other things to debate about. Yeah. But that's not having to go at those people. That's loving and understanding, right? But here's the thing. Like we can either say it's not fair, but that's also an emotional control strategy.
Yeah.
That is a belief. And then when I focus on the fact that it's not fair, where can I go from there?
Yeah.
Or what if I just say, this is happening, okay. I don't like it. I don't have to like it. I don't have to want it to be happening. And I don't have to be passive. Oh, well, it's happening. There's nothing I can do about it. I might as well just suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not about that. It's not about any one of those things, right? It's just about going, okay. Like, okay, I've got a hot flush. What can I do to help myself feel comfortable? I have this little neck fan that I put on. And when I put that neck fan on, it immediately shoots this beautiful, nice cooling, and it cools my head. And guess what? I don't get the panic. I don't get the residual agoraphobia that comes from the panic. I don't get the foreboding. I don't get the feeling of I'm feeling uncomfortable mm-hmm. on a level 3, whereas before I felt a level 10. And the reason why I felt that level 10 is because I was resisting it. I'm having a hot flush. I don't want to be having a hot flush. Why am I having a hot flush? This sucks. Is this my life? Mm-hmm. Not fair.
Yeah. And I think this topic of perimenopause is so important for people who are listening or who may be thinking that they're going through it, but then just needs to be more awareness. And so what we will do for anybody who is listening, we will link where they can find you because it's, I feel like you're menopause first aid for people. I'm going to get the link from you where these neck fans are.
Yeah, just, no, is that something you just clip onto the top of your shirt? Is that what a neck fan is? I'm like, do you have a brand you recommend?
I reckon that you just gave me something there by calling that menopause first aid, because we were the project team was talking about it going, what do we call this? And we're like, what is it? And that's perfect.
Do I get any credit?
Yeah. Oh, or call it neck fan. I don't know. Chloe, like either one of those is great.
Both, you'll get all the credit. You get all the credit.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us today,
Kimberly. Oh, this has been wonderful.
Yeah, it's been really great and insightful.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm just, it's been such a thrill to be able to talk about this stuff. And my husband will be very, very grateful that he doesn't have to tonight.
You can cruise into the weekend knowing that you've had your fix.
That's right.
And we are incredibly grateful to be on the receiving end of that.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
If you liked it, leave us a review and follow us on socials. We'd love to hear from you.